More than half of the world's population does, did, or will menstruate. Blood out of the vagina for several days a month is a fact of life for that portion of the population, and apparently freaks out much of the other half of the population. Talking about menstruation and periods and even vaginas can be taboo in many cultures. The situation is explored in the recent book Period, End of Sentence. The title may sound familiar. It was also the title of an Oscar-winning documentary. We have both the author of the book, Anita Diamond, and the producer of the film, Melissa Burton, with us. Anita Diamond is a longtime author and journalist with a mix of longer and shorter works of fiction and nonfiction to her credit, including the novels The Boston Girl and The Red Tent. Melissa Burton is the founder and executive director of The PAD Project. She produced the Oscar-winning short, also called Period, End of Sentence, and wrote a foreword for this book. Anita Diamond, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Melissa Burton, good to have you.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
And so, Melissa, this really starts with you because the book is an outgrowth of the movie. So did you choose Anita as the author for the book?
Yes, actually, but no also is the answer to that. Anita was the first name that came to my mind when I was speaking with our agent, Amanda Urban, and she thought that would be an excellent idea. And called Anita Diamond right away, and to our delight, Anita said yes.
So, Anita, talk about watching the Oscar broadcast in 2019 where the movie Period, End of Sentence won for Best Documentary Short.
Well, I was watching on the broadcast, and then they announced the winner of this film, which I hadn't heard of before, and I watched this incredibly enthusiastic group of young women run up to the stage. And a director lifted the Oscar up in the air, and she said, "I can't believe a movie about periods just won an Oscar." And I jumped off the couch and pumped the air, you know, fist pumped the air, and watched as the camera panned, you know, all these movie stars, women movie stars, standing up and applauding with huge smiles on their faces. So that was my introduction. And the next day, I watched the film. It was available on Netflix the next day. And wonderful movie, very moving, very powerful, clearly really well made. And I didn't give it much more thought than that until I got this phone call. And then I said yes. A little bit like getting married. With these sort of arranged marriage a little bit.
You're right. So, Melissa Burton, what kind of a response came from the film, and how much did the Oscar win help boost that, boost the signal?
Well, tremendously. Absolutely tremendously. So, we created the PAD Project nonprofit organization at the same time that we went about making the film so that we could raise, my high school students and I could raise the money to make the film and the use the nonprofit to house the funds to make the film. And then with hope, fingers crossed, we would, the nonprofit would still be able to continue and place PAD machines in other countries around the world after the film. We never thought that it would work as well as it did. And after literally the night that we won the Oscar and those speeches that Anita was referring to were made and people knew about this film and is available on Netflix, I received literally thousands of emails to our PAD Project info account associated with the film. People wanting machines in their own community, people wanting to tell about the PAD drive for homeless women in their neighborhood, people wanting to talk about their own period story, people wanting to talk about the tampon tax. It was just like, you know, turning over a rock and everything crawls out and comes out. And we were just humbled and excited by the amount of interest and need for action around menstrual justice.
So let's back up a little bit and talk about what the PAD Project is about and the PAD machines you're talking about.
Sure. So the PAD Project is an organization dedicated to the principle that a period should end a sentence, not a girl's education. We partner with local and global communities to end period stigma and to empower women and all menstruators. To do that, we sometimes place what is called a pad manufacturing machine or factory, which is very small, sort of like the size of three blenders in a row, that makes sanitary pads that are 93% biodegradable, that employ the women operating the machine and also make pads more accessible for women and girls in whatever community, because they are cheaper than what you could buy at the market. They're more readily available. And I have heard, I actually had one myself. They're also pretty comfortable. So they're a good solution. We also work with what's called washable pads, which are reusable cloth pads. And we also just supply your regular store-bought pads to domestic abuse shelters, homeless shelters, foster care places. So the idea is that every person deserves a right to have access to a safe means to manage their periods.
We only have a little time before a break here, but I want to follow up on what you said. Period should end a sentence, not a girl's education. It does in parts of the world, doesn't it, Melissa?
Correct. That's how my high school students and I began this journey. We learned about this issue of girls who do not know what's happening to their bodies, are therefore scared to attend school, to leave the home, think something is wrong with them, or suffer from debilitating cramps, or suffer the shame and embarrassment of maybe, you know, God forbid, staining a uniform or staining their clothes so that they might not be able to stay in school. This is something we wanted to work to raise awareness around and to eradicate, because there's no reason that somebody should be prevented from continuing her education because of a natural biological process.
So, Anita, you mentioned seeing the women on Oscar night and then watching the film the next day. I mean, give us a sense of the landscape here, because even in a culture like ours, where taboos are supposed to be few, is this still a zone we enter cautiously talking about menstruation?
Yeah, the book is was inspired by the movie. It's really kind of a global overview of a little bit of the history and culture that brings us to this point in time where menstruation is still something we tend to whisper about. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're talking about it on the radio comfortably and you're not making silly jokes about it is a testament to the fact that we are making some progress. But I have to say that, you know, the thing about girls staying home from school, this is not just an issue, the no access to products and also in school. That happens in your own zip code, that there are girls who are out of products and their family can't afford food, much less menstrual products, and they have to make a decision about going to school with toilet paper stuffed down their pants or a sock in their pants because mom can't afford to buy what they need. And then even if you do go to school, you're distracted and you can't concentrate on what's going on and how are you going to do on your math test and are you going to try out for the softball team? No. So this hampers, it hampers people who menstruate from living their full lives and being who they are in all kinds of settings. And it goes, of course, beyond products and having products be accessible, which is, of course, very important. But we live in a culture where menstruation is still whispered about, where men are still freaked out in very strange ways about menstruation. There's an episode in the book where a young woman put up on her Twitter feed, "Tell me the stupidest thing a man ever said to you about menstruation." And they're stunning.
Oh,
they
boy.
Are really
that must
stunning.
Be a rich yeah. treasure trove.
It was. I mean, it ranges from truly horrible, from thinking that menstruation proves that you've had sex, and fathers who think this sometimes beat their daughters, but also men thinking that every month that you you expel something that looks like the size of a chocolate Easter egg every month, and that's what menstruation is. Or that one of my favorites is a woman said, "I've been married for 13 years, and every month my husband says, 'Again?'"
Oh,
it's like, yeah, yeah,
yeah. I've had friends tell me that their husbands wouldn't touch them when they were on their period.
Oh, right, right. And this is not so old and long ago. A friend of mine told me her grandmother told her that if she took a shower while she was menstruating, she wouldn't be able to have children. So we're not talking about far away and long ago. There are still a lot of
fantasies and superstitions about menstruation and menstrual blood and all of that. And the big problem to me is the lack of education for everybody, not just people who menstruate, but everybody. So the lack of really serious, good, comprehensive sexual health education, just body education, puts us all at a disadvantage. And the common practice of separating boys and girls into separate classes for sex ed, means that they don't share a common language. They don't get to see adults talking comfortably about these things in a mixed group. And it often puts kids who are not sure about their gender identity into the weird position of trying to figure out where they belong and then not finding out what they need to know or outing themselves. So we're still a long way from good sex education, good health education around the world, including in the United States. And that will help in the long run take care of a lot of these problems.
So, Anita, let's go to square one in education. It is the unfertilized egg and the uterine lining coming out when at the end of a period.
Yep, that's once a month, about. Mm-hmm. Everyone's a little bit different. yeah, that's menstruation. It's not all that scary, but it's blood. And blood, of course, is something that scares people. Menstrual blood has all kinds of mythic qualities ascribed to it in different cultures, from the ancient Greeks who thought that contact with menstrual blood would make metal knives go rusty and wither crops in the field. And and there are still countries and cultures and families where women on their periods are not, they don't go into the kitchen because there's this belief that they will, in fact, spoil food, that things won't cook properly because they're menstruating. So all of these things still swirl around, and the language we use is a big part of this. You know, one of the things I wrote in the book is the word "the curse."
Uh-huh.
There are lots of euphemisms for periods, but the curse, there are lots of curses, but the curse, we all know, is menstruation. And that, if that word is holds true, that means that people who menstruate are cursed in some ways, which makes them dangerous, off limits, strange, to be avoided. So, you know, it's our language, it's what we don't know, it's stories we heard as kids, and the secrecy and let's face it, misogyny that that keeps menstruation as a problem for all of us, really.
Anita Diamond is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, talking about her book, Period, End of Sentence, which is a follow-up to the film by the same name. Melissa Burton, the producer of the film, is with us on the Jefferson Exchange as well. Melissa, since the film, have there been some changes in laws and procedures? You mentioned period poverty first, and then we talked about what that means when people can't afford the products they need when they're menstruating. Have there been some changes, laws, procedures, availability of period products since the film?
Yes. So in the United States, there is a tax that is imposed on what each state deems is a luxury item or a not necessary item. So for years, period products were taxed in almost all states, whereas other products like candy bars, bingo supplies, gun club memberships, Mardi Gras beads are not taxed. Currently, there are 28 states in the United States where period products are still not tax-free, and 22 states, including Oregon and California, which are happily tax-free. And that scoreboard of taxation around periods keeps changing for the better. So we hope that eventually all states will not impose a tax on period products. And then around the world, policies are changing and improving so that New Zealand very recently, just in the last year, legislated that there needed to be period supplies free in all high schools, in all middle schools there. Scotland did the same thing. Scotland did away with the tampon tax altogether. Kenya as well. So different countries around the world are having period positive policies and legislation to help normalize and make it possible for that half of the world that you were talking about at the beginning of the show who menstruate, to make it possible for them to participate as full and equal citizens in their communities.
We got an email at the top of the hour from Patricia Ann in Eureka, who wants to know about a particular product. She says, please discuss menstrual cups and their use, distribution, research, availability, et cetera. Hard to manufacture from local materials. And then she asks, maybe intestines?
Interesting. I like her thinking. She's forward thinking. So just for listeners who might not know, menstrual cups are a kind of I'm not sure what it's like, a silicone or rubber cup that you put in and it catches the blood, and then you then sterilize the menstrual cup and then you can use it again the following menstrual cycle. So it's great for the environment over time. It's a cost effective solution. The issue for many menstruators around the world is that the initial investment in a menstrual cup is expensive, so they can be somewhere between $30 to $40 for a menstrual cup. So if you can't afford, you know, pads or tampons, you're unlikely to be able to afford a menstrual cup. And then around the world, there are cultural taboos against insertion, even here in the United States, where a woman's worth is equated to her virginity, so that a menstrual cup is not a culturally sensitive solution.
Because it goes inside the vagina.
Exactly. Right. So it's seen to be making somebody not a virgin or competing with sex from a husband, which would be the appropriate thing to go into the vagina. So there's a lot of thought around it. Also, on a practical level, you need clean water, which is not available in all places in the world to properly sterilize menstrual cups. So I think they're a fantastic solution where accepted and where the sanitation is available for them.
Menstruation is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to two guests, both involved with the project called Period End of Sentence in Two Forms. Anita Diamond is the author of the recent book, Period End of Sentence, a new chapter in the fight for menstrual justice. Melissa Burton was a producer of the movie by the same title, Period End of Sentence, that won an Oscar for documentary short in 2019. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about trying to change attitudes about menstruation, which are still rather medieval, it appears, in parts of the world. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Anita, in your analysis and exploration of the world and how we respond, how cultures respond, I mean, does the culture tend to override the educational system? So if people want to teach about what menstruation really is, there's cultural pressure not to do that?
Well, certainly, and that's true in the United States, too. This is not far away. There are lots of localities where sex education is a big fight. But I think that education is so lagging everywhere. It's just part of the larger cultural shift, which includes people talking about it, which includes more mentions of menstruation without it being a bad joke on in a popular culture and in high culture, for that matter. I just want to make one more point about menstrual cups. They are safe. I know there's a lot of concern about that. They are made with medical-grade products, silicone. They actually don't have to be sterilized like with, you don't boil them. So they are useful. Environmentalists are big fans of these things. But again, it's only one out of many choices for ways to manage your period. And even before that, what needs to happen, again, is understanding what's happening to your body, that it is healthy. And this is a generational problem. Moms who haven't been talked to by their mothers don't know what to say to their daughters. So it's sort of breaking a very long generational cycle of silence and fear. So we have a lot to change.
We do. Let's talk elsewhere and then come back to this country, because there's a question for each of those. But elsewhere, I mean, I think you quote in the book that Afghanistan, about 50% of people menstruate for the first time without knowing what is happening.
That's right. And that's not an unusual statistic in all sorts of places. There's another statistic in there. I think in the United States, like 80-some% of girls said they knew more about the biology of frogs than they do about their own biology.
So, it's not taught about. It's and the body in general is not talked about in a way that's sort of neutral and just purely informative. One of the sex education teachers I talked to said, really, this conversation should start in fifth grade before it's actually part of your own body. So it's just sort of an interesting fact that happens later, mm-hmm. so that when then there's a follow-up on it when you're in your teens and this does become part of your life, you have a basic knowledge, you have a vocabulary, and it's not taboo because you already know something about it. And that's a big shift. One of the things I really love talking about is dads and menstruation,
uh-huh.
and the important role for fathers. We just had Father's Day, and there's all this conversation about girl dads, you know, and how great they are for supporting their daughters. And the stories in the book about fathers realizing that they had a role to play in their daughter's change of life from being children to being menstruators was really delightful for me. There's a story from online from a few years ago, the dad who mom wasn't home. His daughter, he got a call from school. She had started her period. So dad took her home, helped her change, you know, washed her clothes, took her to the pharmacy, bought products. And then after that, he always kept menstrual pads in his glove compartment. And 20 years later, when she went home as an adult and she realized she needed to stop at the pharmacy, he said, "Oh, do you need a pad? They're still in the glove compartment." So this is just a dad being a human being sensitive and thoughtful for his daughter. And dads who tell their daughters, "You can really talk to me about anything." If your daughter can talk to you about this, they really can talk to you about just about anything. And then you should take that as a big win and pat yourself on the back for being a good dad.
Well, above and beyond, but I do have to wonder, given what you were talking about with like women who don't know because their mothers didn't tell them, so they don't tell mm-hmm. their daughters. But you know, in a culture like ours where women have a lot easier time talking to each other about things where men can know each other for mm-hmm. years and one day go, "Dude, you're married," you know, so do women talk about these things? They talk about things like, you know, how heavy my
flow is. Especially if you have sisters. Yeah. If you're lucky enough to have sisters, which I wasn't, mm-hmm. but Melissa was. there's no mystery about it. And also, you know, we live in the age of the internet, and that's a global phenomenon. So there is information out there. Not all of it is accurate, of course, but you can find out if you have any access to the net about menstruation and what happens. And you can find doctors and you can find medical sites that will tell you what's happening. So there is information out there, but again, if you're 11 or 12 and this happens to you and you haven't done that and your mother hasn't talked to you about it and the girls in the schoolyard haven't talked to you about it, you're really stuck. So yes and.
Yeah.
Yes, there is information.
Right.
Yes, women do talk to each other. In this country, I mean, there are great websites also now in the United States and elsewhere that are very thoughtful and careful about the way they introduce these subjects for young girls, for, you know, 10, 11, 12-year-olds who are getting ready or starting. And since menstruation is starting earlier for a lot of some known and some unknown reasons, mm-hmm. The information needs to be available to much younger girls than used to be in the past. Mm-hmm.
Melissa,
right,
you're a teacher.
You're
go ahead.
You were just asking me about some of the different kinds of responses we received after the Oscar win in the film. And so many responses were just wonderful stories of sort of sisterhood, just people wanting to share, like, "Oh my goodness, I got my period, you know, in the middle of a big conference and I went to the restroom and, you know, there were other women in there and five of them offered me a product." And people have these kinds of stories all over. So to your point, there's a definite understanding. And that's why I think the film probably did do so well. We didn't have a lot of the sort of bells and whistles. We had no track record as documentary filmmakers, but because the film touched on something that people everywhere, half the population once again, will or have experienced, it received, I think, just so much attention and recognition because we're all there. We've all been there.
Anita, opposite to the stuff we've been talking about, the cultural taboos and the reluctance to talk about it, what is a period party? This seems to go quite the other way.
yes. Well, a period party is sort of the opposite of whispering about menstruation.
Did we lose Anita? Anita, you there? It looks like I need to drop it off the line. Phone call dropped. Okay.
Some people, I'll go ahead and answer. She may be hearing us, but many people are having parties to celebrate the onset of menstruation with red velvet cakes, red-themed streamers, this kind of stuff, where they'll invite their friends, boys, too, in many cases, and just celebrate, which is a wonderful thing to see.
All right. So, wow. That's and who initiated this? I mean, any idea where the first period party was held?
It's really interesting. In indigenous cultures, there have been for centuries, which got civilization, but the first sort of celebration of periods are in these wonderful coming of age ceremonies in different tribe, the Yurok tribe, the Ojibwe tribe, did these beautiful ceremonies to celebrate the onset of menstruation. And then recently in culture, in American culture, there has been this phenomenon of middle school students wanting to have quote-unquote period parties where they invite friends over and celebrate this coming into adulthood.
Okay. So, and you're back with us, Anita?
Yes, I am. I just want to say that there's a tremendous amount of sense of humor about period parties, that there's this sort of great, joyful, happy to be outrageous thing about having a red velvet cake at your period party and and sort of trying to gross out mom and dad. And that, to me, this is a great step forward in getting rid of stigma of owning what's happening to your body and having and fooling around with it, as is the want of 14-year-old kids with one another. So, one of the most interesting things, I know I just overheard Melissa talking about, one of the most wonderful things the research doing the research for the book was discovering cultures, indigenous cultures around the world that honor menarche, the onset of menstruation, and it just gives you a peek into a whole alternative universe in which menstruation is not considered foul or dirty, nor are menstruants, and the beginning of menstruation is considered a joyful occasion. It means that the tribe, that your people, continues because there's a new birth giver among you. So it's a very different mindset, and it's really refreshing to even imagine a world like that.
It is refreshing, and I'll tell you something. There are only two illustrations in the book, okay, three, including Anita's picture, but it's the people on stage accepting the Oscar. The very first image in the book, though, facing the also by Anita Diamond thing, is a rock art painting from the Pilbara region in northwestern Australia, showing menstruating women dancing, and there's no question about what you're seeing once you see the explanation, and that very old, right, apparently, right. Anita.
Yeah, nobody knows for sure. 35,000 years old. These are very, very ancient rock paintings in Australia. So yeah, they're either dancing or hunting. It's hard to tell. you can sort of decide which you think it is. And there's a kind of just outrageous, it's not outrageous at all in that world. It was just acknowledging that women were hunters and dancers and that women bled once a month. And that didn't stop them, obviously, from hunting or dancing. So it's a real reminder that the way it is not the way it has always been, nor is it the way it has to be in the future.
All right, let's see, a drop-off comment from Hammond Ashland, who writes, so often menstruation products are marketed at women when many people who have periods identify as men, non-binary, other. How can we begin to shift the conversation to be more gender inclusive? And I should point out, you do that in the book, Anita.
Yes, and we can start with the menstrual product. You know, it's like the feminine hygiene aisle in the drugstore. It's like a big sign that says, "Don't enter here. All ye who have penises, do not enter into this space." This is about. It's not about hygiene. Makes you think it's dirty. Feminine means it's got to be, you know, it's girly. Mm-hmm. So there are stores now that have changed the signage to say period products or menstrual products, which neutralizes it. Right, makes it just a neutral term. It's non-gendered, and that's. But talking about these things with non-gendered language is just the beginning, but it's very important. Language matters a lot. And the whole notion, again, of inclusive sexual health education where everybody is together, that's also important. And as people advocate, I really want to make a pitch for putting period products in all bathrooms, like toilet paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm talking to people about this and I say, you know, you don't walk around with a roll of toilet paper in your pocket, do you? And they go, no. And I say, well, and
or have to pay a quarter for it when you're in a restroom. Yeah.
Or if you have a quarter, right. Or if there's a machine, or if there's a working machine, on and on. But, you know, if you had to pay 25 cents every time you needed toilet paper, there would be a revolution, right? How can you do that? And this is, again, for half of the population at some point in their lives, menstruators need these products in public. And, you know, I think one day, and on campuses where college students are really advocating and pushing their administrations to put menstrual products in the bathrooms, they're advocating to put them in all of the bathrooms. That includes bathrooms for women, for men, and all gender bathrooms. And it raises hackles to talk about menstrual products in men's bathrooms or all gender bathrooms, but it opens the conversation, and that conversation is really happening on campuses all over the world and in all kinds of campuses, from small Catholic colleges to big universities, state universities, and the Ivy League. Everybody, this is a conversation on all campuses, and it's having success. To some extent, I have to believe, because there are more women in the administration in these places who understand this issue on a visceral level.
Melissa, what do you find in the industry that makes products, period products? Are they going going with the flow? Sorry, that would have been
That's
okay.
All fun.
So, are they going with the changes? Are they keeping up with the pressures to be more inclusive, to make their products more easily available, et cetera?
I do think so. MIDOL brand that helps pain for cramps just came out with a wonderful ad that showed various different menstruators saying, I'm not going to apologize for having my period. I'm not going to say sorry for having my period. And it's a commercial in effect for MIDOL, but what's wonderful about it is that each person is talking about not apologizing for what their body does and not having to feel shame around it. That feels very new to me, that approach to advertising. I think that L brand, this is L with whom the PAD Project partners, is very aware of what the person asking the question about not all women menstruate and not all menstruators are women. So they are very careful in their language to include all menstruators and to be open to this conversation. So I do think that more and more product needs to keep up with this demand to not live in shame around menstruation.
We got an email from Vicky, no town given, who writes, okay, good job. Now try talking about incontinence in adult women. Those pad manufacturers have refocused and are now gouging older adults, says Vicky. Knowledge of this?
Yeah.
Well,
the period underwear is one of the newer products, and they're being advertised not so much on television, but the same basically technology for incontinence is being marketed as, you know, using very active, slim, attractive women who can, you know, slip these on over their tight jeans, underneath tight jeans. So she has a point, but this is part of the technology. Period underwear has gone down in price. This is an alternative to wearing tampons or pads. They're absorbent underpants. They're reusable. They're washable. And the prices are coming down precipitously. The more people buy them, the more competition there is, the prices will come down. And my hope is that those underpants, those are disposables, will also come down as there's more competition. So, you know, this is America, this is capitalism, and where there's a new market, there are new products, and at the beginning, they're always expensive.
So,
and I think it's,
go ahead.
Yeah, it stems from the same thing. So lack of product or attention to menopausal women is, partner with lack of attention to women who are menstruating. Once more, people who menstruate are in places of power and can represent, then I think more products will be readily available.
More cheaply available. Okay. Anita, let's get into the subject of race brought up in the book, because there is racialized thinking that certainly exacerbates issues about menstruation, periods, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Powerlessness compounds any problem, and that includes medical care. Women of color, black women in particular, have worse outcomes in almost all health, in all health measures, and especially in gynecological and menstrual, included in that. So the pain that is experienced by black women and men is often dismissed by medical professionals. There's still this belief, it's hard to believe this, but that black people don't feel pain as much as white people. That is still one of those old canards that lingers on in the medical world. So there are women who have suffered for years with terrible endometriosis pain and have been dismissed, and it becomes a serious health issue at that point. There are very few black doctors in this country. I believe it's only 11% of OBGYNs are women of color. So having someone taking care of you who looks like you is pretty unlikely. But the powerlessness thing, that is across the board. So menstruators who are in prison, menstruators who are homeless, menstruators who are refugees who are poor, are all impacted by the problems that can go with menstruation, the way that that middle class and, for the most part, white women don't have to face. So it compounds the issues, and it makes them even more unfair on some level.
We got an email from Kate who says, I think it's important to start talking to kids when they're very young. When my children were as young as 2 and 3 years old, both my daughter and my son would take turns getting mommy's pad, and it was something they felt very honored to do. So says Kate.
Bravo!
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, if you start talking about mommy needs a pad, that later on, a pad will not be something toxic. It will just be something that mom has. And my advice to people who ask what they can do, they can certainly support programs like the PAD Project. They can ask why there are no products in their office at work, and they can put out pads and tampons on the vanities in the bathroom at home. So when guests come in, just in case somebody needs one, they don't have to ask. And even more important, so that people who don't need one, including children, would say, "What's that?" And you can have a quick conversation about, well, somebody might be having their period and they might need it. And then the word will spread so that in every bathroom, in museums and libraries and hotels and restaurants and in every house that you go to, just like there's soap and water and a towel and toilet paper, there are period products. And that normalizes it for everybody.
So, Melissa, we're down to our last 40 seconds or so. How much has the PAD Project succeeded in getting PAD machines out to the world at large?
We are now in nine PAD machines in as many countries. We will have 13 PAD machine programs in 13 countries, including a women's hospital in Afghanistan. We have machines in rural villages, in college communities around the world, in East Africa. We have washable PAD programs in various countries, including Mexico, and we're very, very excited. An ambassador program where young people all over the world join us in this fight for menstrual justice.
Melissa Burton is the founder and executive director of the PAD Project, producer of the film Period End of Sentence, which won an Oscar, the book Period End of Sentence, a new chapter in the fight for menstrual justice, written by Anita Diamond. They've been nice enough to join us on The Exchange today. Thank you both for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Our pleasure. Wonderful questions. Appreciate it.
All right,
bye.
Take care.